today, and you all laughed. You all laughed when I said, do adults know everything? Anybody forget? I forgot 10 times already this morning. And the reality is we're only one breath away, one lullaby away, one remembrance away, one prayer away, one relationship away from remembering again. That's holy. You realize the blessed holiness and sacredness of that idea here in this room, right here, right now. One tap, one light touch, one whisper, one embrace from remembering the truth. I don't know about you, but the world seems to be in a lot of upheaval these days, and I've been a little bit scared. And I needed that lullaby. I needed to know that no matter how far I go, that I am not alone. And that lullaby is always there. This morning, just a little offshoot from the talk today, I got a call about 6:30 that our church had been vandalized. And I thought, yes, there was a lot of broken glass here. And I want to pay just honor and homage to our men's group led by Michael Doss. Josh Bloodworth was here, Sarah Michelle's husband, Ismael Rosas, a member of our board of directors. They rushed in here, and Jay Schofield. They rushed in, and we got it all clean so that we could have this sacred, safe place. And I thought, it's not an accident. We don't know exactly who did it, but we have a really good idea that it was probably some kids. And then this first service, we had a beautiful young child where it was easy to see the presence of God. And we had to hold the truth, the divine truth, that everywhere I look, I see the face of God, even in the glass that was all over the parking lot that you didn't see when you got here because of the children of God that showed up and cleaned it up. Anybody have anybody in your life where we're talking about it? We're all children of God. Everywhere I look, I see the face of God. But just that person, that one person, is a kind of an out-of-control kid. I want you to hold that one person in your heart today. That one person that you have placed outside the boundaries and the borders of your love, and just be present to that today. They are never far away. They're only as far away as our ability to sing that lullaby, to hold that prayer, and to know that truth. I'm going to stay pretty close to my script today because I want to make sure you're out of here on time. So there are voices that shake the mountains. There are voices that command armies, voices that fill stadiums, voices that fill history books. And then there are voices, sweet, soft, gentle voices that arrive in whispers, wrapped in blankets, barely 7 pounds, breathing their first breath into a world that is waiting for them. The world calls them small, like a honeybee. Oh, just another child, beautiful, easy to love. Spirit calls them possibility. Spirit calls them possibility for a new future, a new earth, a new humanity. Last week, we honored the elders as children of God. Today, the youngest members of our community. You know, nature has never, ever believed that the largest things matter the most. You agree? Nature does not do that. The vast ocean is filled one raindrop at a time. The good that we are seeking, the good that we are creating, is filled one thought at a time, one moment at a time, one child at a time, one lullaby and one prayer at a time. The giant redwood begins with an inside of seed smaller than my fingernail. You can see it up there on the screen. Life doesn't begin with bigness. Bigness is what we adults put out here. We over-intellectualize, we over-theorize, and we make everything bigger than it needs to be, when perhaps what we need to do is return to the simplicity of what we have forgotten. 5 years old, 10 years old, 2 years old, the universe delights in disguising infinite potential in the midst of very humble packages. Have you noticed that? Oh, but let's make it more complicated. Let's add more. Let's make it bigger and better. Perhaps that's why spiritual awakening is missed by so many people on the planet, because it comes like a gentle whisper. It is soft, and it's not in a big package. In the book of 1 Kings, we hear like a still small voice, the essence of God is going to speak to us. It's not coming in like a marching band and a parade and crashing cymbals. There's no thunder and lightning. But that's what we expect. I need the epiphany. I need the revelation. And the reality, what we need to do is get quiet enough, to get still enough, remember the child enough to listen. To listen, to pay attention, and to be mindful. That's why we miss enlightenment. It's right here, and we've missed it. How many people had a teacher that was really loud growing up? I had a lot of teachers, and they were loud and wild. They could get the intention of the class, and if they didn't, they'd take the eraser. I had many a chalk mark on my, I'm dating myself, chalk marks from the eraser from the teacher. But they're not the teachers I remember. They're not the teachers that impacted my life. The ones that got to my heart and my soul were the ones that said, and the wild crowd and the chaos of the crowd would get still again. And everybody in that class would lean in to hear what the teacher had to say. How many of us are creating the very diversions to enlightenment because we're so loud? And we think we need more. Been there, done that. I need something more. I need a better lesson. I need something greater. Every child is a new expression of the infinite, arriving without a whole lot of baggage. They arrive without prejudice. They arrive without resentment. And they arrive, these kids arrive without all the baggage that we adults often mistake for wisdom. I'm so enlightened. You know, Michelangelo was asked how he created the David, the beautiful statue. He said, I just took away everything that wasn't David. Meister Eckhart said, God is found in the soul by a process of subtraction, not addition. But we adults try to add on to it, and maybe we can stop, get quiet, and listen long enough to know that the kids are teaching us something. They come without titles and labels. They come without bank accounts, political opinions. They come without the trophies and the judgments. No need to prove they belong. They belong because they exist. That's easy to do. Not the little toddler we had today. Easy to say you belong just because you exist. And then you look to the left or your right to the adults in the room. Or you watch the TV and you hear what's on the news and you say, no, they don't belong anymore. If we are a house built on a rock and not on sand, we must know that everybody exists. Everywhere I look, I see the face of God, even the people I don't like. Even the people I don't agree with. If I create the division, then I'm just the same energy creating the same duality on the planet that they are. I must rise above. I must find the inner child that says, I love you. I must be like a puppy dog, if you will. You know, a dog can be yelled at and screamed at, and they come back later and they're wagging their tail, I still love you. Can we do that? Kids don't have to prove they exist. They belong because they exist. The first lesson of every child is one many spend a lifetime trying to relearn. Guilty is charged. I've spent a lifetime trying to relearn this. Let's read it together. You don't have to earn your worth. You don't have to earn your right to exist. You don't have to become lovable. You already are. This is the lesson of a child right there. They speak without words this phrase, love me before I can give you anything. Say that with me. Love me before I can give you anything. Love me before I can impress you. Love me simply because I am. Everything else on top of those statements is commentary, is in the way of us finding God, of God finding God, of love finding love, of peace and oneness, finding peace and oneness. Let's start removing some garbage out of the way. Spirit is already present in the child as it learns to laugh for the first time. That is the most holy sound on the planet. You ever heard a baby just uncontrollably laughing? When was the last time you laughed like that? Let's find something to laugh about. But the holy already exists in the laugh or in the smile. The first it discovers, I can smile. When somebody looks at me, the child smiles back. When was the last time you went through the store and you just smiled at everybody you met? Collected smiles. Collect smiles. No, what we do is we go through the aisle and we pass somebody in the aisle. I wonder who they voted for. And we don't look them in the eye. I wonder what party they belong to. And little by little by little, I wonder if they're Christian, Muslim, Jew. And little by little by little, the chasm gets wider and deeper. We forget to just look at somebody that exists on the planet and to smile and to feel the connection of the heart. That's what's missing from the planet. Children arrive overflowing with it, overflowing with wonder and trust and laughter and imagination. There's a Miley Cyrus song. I have Sirius Radio, and it's no accident that this old song has shown up, and it's playing on my station that I like. It's sort of a coffee house station. It's playing. Every time I get in the car, I swear, there's somebody in control going, Burdick's in the car, play the Miley Cyrus song. But I think it's absolutely germane to what I'm talking about. If the words to this song say, hey, you, it's younger you, don't forget who I am. Have you already forgotten? There must be something to it. Perhaps children have not come to learn from us, but rather they have come to teach us what we have forgotten. Hey, you, remember me? I'm younger, you. Do you remember? Are we teachable? I'm asking us today. That's not rhetorical. Are you teachable? A lot of people, there's a lot of arrogance. Well, masquerading as religion. Masquerading as new thought. I know everything. I've got it. I don't need that lesson. You know, the greatest mathematicians still use addition and subtraction. The greatest mathematicians still have to use algebra. I learned it in seventh or eighth grade, I think. If you're from a foreign land, I've talked to a number of people who said, I learned algebra in second grade, in third grade. We're a little bit behind, but we're catching up. But the reality is, there is a spiritual arrogance. Been there, done that, know that, got the t-shirt, I don't need that. And perhaps sitting at the foot of a child, the feet of a child, is exactly the lesson that is needed. The tragedy is that we stop listening. I'm getting a little preachy, I know. Put your ears on. Jesus said it over and over and over. He who has ears to hear, eyes to see, pay attention is what he was saying. Our master teacher, don't shut out the good. Anybody ever see a child discover a butterfly for the first time? It's magical. It's beautiful. And I go, hey, you, it's younger you. Why can't I be as fascinated with that butterfly or that bee? The child doesn't photograph it, doesn't post it, got to get it online, analyze it, dissect it, or judge it as a pretty butterfly or a moth. They simply discover it and go, wow. When was the last time you went, wow? Say that with me. Wow. That's the most spiritual word on the planet. That brief moment when the entire universe just becomes one butterfly. Sounds like meditation to me. Nothing else exists. No headlines, no judgments, no mortgages, no elections, no stock markets. Just butterfly, only wonder. That sounds a lot like meditation to me. How about you? The complete surrender of attention to the sacred nowness. Children don't need to be learning meditation, except for the fact that we as adults have taught them to forget. Oh, that's just another butterfly. Come on, we got to get on the car and we got to go. We got an appointment we're late for. Perhaps adults need to stop confusing visibility with value or volume with influence. The smallest things often sustain and hold the greatest miracles. A heartbeat. When was the last time you just felt your heartbeat? A seed. A smile. A touch. A prayer in the silence of your own heart. Or a child. Or as our master teacher Jesus pointed out, a mustard seed. A sparrow. A lily. Coins, children. Jesus was fascinated with what everybody else was overlooking. Anybody catch yourself? I was driving home one day and talking to somebody, and we were engaged in a very intense conversation, and was going to take them home. And we're driving and driving and driving, not paying really close attention. We're just arguing. And I said, by the way, where do you live? And they looked around and they went, about 5 miles back. A lot of us are so hungry and thirsty for some kind of destination, for the ultimate truth, the ultimate learning, that we've missed it 5 miles, 10 miles, 1,000 miles back. The truth is just being present to home, being present to a butterfly, to the beauty, to the goodness. Jesus was fascinated with what everybody else was missing and had overlooked. Let's be among those that stop and pay attention. What miracle have you overlooked today? I'll be honest, it was a gorgeous morning. And when I was sweeping up glass in the front of the church, I missed the sun. I missed the beauty. I did not miss the humidity. It was on full display. Don't get too close after service. Every nursery is a laboratory of possibility and growth. Every beautiful lullaby, a prayer that tomorrow can be better than today. Tomorrow can be better than yesterday. That takes mindfulness and presence and meditation. Perhaps children are not only our future, but perhaps children are our memory. Breathe that in. Children aren't. I believe that children are the future. I believe that children are our memory. And they're going, wake up. Wake up, you have forgotten. They remember something we've forgotten: joy, imagination, play, laughter, trust, oneness, love. Maybe love is our first language and everything else is learned behavior that needs to be pulled aside. Love is the first language and we've convoluted it with a lot of stuff. A lot of behavior, a lot of distraction, a lot of judgment, a lot of duality. Smile. You belong because you exist. You belong because you exist. You know, indigenous people said this quote. Let's put the next slide up there, please. Together, we don't inherit the earth from our ancestors. We borrow it from our children. I wonder if that's true for Unity North. We spend a lot of time talking about the building we own. The building we own. Oh, it's good or it's not good. It's in the red, it's in the black. Perhaps we don't own this church at all, but we borrow it from the kids that are already running in the hallways that we have judged. They shouldn't be running. They should be more behaved. Perhaps we're borrowing the church from them, and we need to be a little bit more loose and relaxed in our judgments, in our control. Perhaps we're not called to teach them our beliefs, but to build a spiritual home that is spacious enough, that is open enough, that is awake enough for their exploration. Hey you, it's me, younger you, don't forget me. Myrtle Fillmore, our co-founder, absolutely knew this truth when she writes this. Who meddles with the rosebud? What fingers are deft enough to pry open that marvel of folded beauty? We are wise enough to leave it alone, to follow the glad law of its own unfolding. But our children? Have we dealt as wisely with these buds of marvelous possibility? Have we always remembered that they too must quicken and unfold through the innate law of their own genius? What is the question of children that just drives us adults nuts? Call it out. Why? Universal, you all knew it. Why? 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 Why do they say why? Not because they doubt life, but because they trust life enough to believe there's always more to learn. There's more to grow. There's more to uncover. There's more to discover. Oh, the glorious questions of children that often we answer much too quickly because they've made us a little too uncomfortable. Running in the hallways of consciousness. Asking questions like, where was I before I was born? Where does love go when someone dies? If God made everything, who made God? Can animals pray? Do animals go to heaven? Why questions get more difficult? Why do people fight if everyone wants to be happy? I don't have an answer. Why do we continually fight when all we really want is to be happy. Questions are not interruptions. They are sacred openings to the sanctuary of our souls, of our essence. The philosopher asks questions seeking information. Nothing wrong with that. Why does the child ask question? Not rhetorical. What's your answer? The philosopher seeks information. The child is seeking connection. The child is seeking understanding. The child is seeking relationship. The child is never collecting facts to prove a case. We're all lawyers. Let me ask a question to get some information so I can expose it and then use it in a court of law in our relationship. Duality, duality, duality. The child is seeking connection with the question, trying to weave together a universe that makes sense. And what we're handing them doesn't make a lot of sense right now. Let us be among those who find the inner child and make a little bit more sense. Every question is an act of hope. Every question says, I believe there is meaning here. Say that with me. I believe there is meaning here. I believe there's meaning here, 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 and here. Let us not rush to answer. You know, sometimes our greatest gift is simply to wonder with them. Sometimes the best answer, and we're not comfortable with it. That's it. Judy Demers got it. I don't know. Next slide. Michelangelo, at the age of 87, said, I'm still learning. I'm still growing. I'm still becoming. Let's read what Albert Einstein had to say. The more I learn, the more I realize how much I don't know. I don't know is a beautiful, sacred answer. But no, we have to rush with our books and our teaching and our teachers and say, I have a corner on the market of truth, and now you must regurgitate it. And kids go, you're shutting us down. You're shutting the extension and the expression of God that wants expression by telling me you have a corner on the market of truth. That needs to stop, and that's what we do here. The bee is just as important as the elephant. Yes? There's a spiritual maturity in the one who is able to say, I have more to learn. Then come the school years. The school years, the beautiful, awkward season when children begin discovering not only the world, but themselves. And thus the game of duality begins. I can do this, and I can't do this because somebody told me that. They like me. They don't like me. Here I belong. Here I don't belong. And the great brainwashing begins. The mirrors multiply as they begin seeing themselves through the eyes of others. Others. And we adults are perpetrating it. This is when words become sacred architecture and words become sacred seeds. One careless sentence becomes a lifelong prison. Not a rhetorical question either. How many people, no matter how much healing work you've done, no matter how many classes you've taken, carry something that happened to you when you were young that you still carry as a part of who you are? Good, bad, or otherwise. Just when I think I've healed it, there it is again. I got some more work to do. Careful the things you say, children will listen. Careful the things you do, children will see and learn. Children may not obey, but children will listen. Children will look to you for which way to turn, to learn what to be. Careful before you say, listen to me. Children are listening. The old song from South Pacific. You've got to be taught. You've got to be carefully taught. Our actions and our words, when we think nobody is looking, they're getting into the minds of the children. Why do people fight when they want to be happy? Why do we teach love at church and then go into the restaurant and we hear hateful words coming out of your mouth, mommy, daddy, grandma, grandpa? We must understand that we are planting seeds for the future. Let them be holy seeds. And then almost overnight, everything changes. The child who wanted bedtime stories begins asking questions about justice and identity, belonging and purpose. Welcome to adolescence. How many people, when you always ask the question, if you could go back to any age that you've lived on this planet, I've never met anybody that said, oh, I can't wait to go back in the time machine and go back to adolescence. How many people have a teenager that knows the buttons you own? 13-year-old girls know every button that I own, and they know exactly how to push it without even speaking a word. They can say one word. Whatever. Bam, bam, the lightning's going off, and I'm out of control, and everything I teach from this platform is gone in a moment. Whatever. You know, they say that teenagers explain why some species eat their young in the wild. The season when the soul begins stretching faster than the personality can accommodate. And that's happening spiritually. Our soul is expanding and our mindset is not keeping up. Our soul wants the expansion, the good, the beautiful that we know is there, but we're not, our personality's not keeping up. We are out of congruity. Let's look at that. And the questions get way more difficult. I'm going to invite the band to come up. The questions become much more difficult. We often mistake this season. We see contradiction where spirit sees expansion. We see mood swings where spirit sees emergence. We see challenge where spirit sees evolution. Teenagers, basically, plain and simple, have not yet learned to accept injustice simply because it has existed for a long time. It's the way it's always been. I'm so sick of hearing that. That is a recipe for death. It's the way we've always done it. It's the way it's always been. And another child dies. Another child dies. Questions like, why is there hunger? Why is there racism? I don't understand. Why is there war? Why can't adults get along? Why do we say we care about the planet while treating it as disposable? It doesn't make sense to the children's mind. It's always been that way. We're fine. Get over it. And then the big one, how come your actions don't meet your words? Ooh, teenagers, the buttons get off. Alan Cohen said it's not the insult that bothers us. It's the part of us that agrees with the insult that is really bothered. Teenagers are not merely questioning authority. They are questioning unconsciousness. They push boundaries, absolutely, because every generation must discover where old boundaries have become prisons. Your homework for this week is to go have a conversation with a teenager. Go find a teenager. They're going to go like, what are you on? I want to sit down and have a talk with you. I want to pick your brain. What if we stopped asking, how can we get the children to think like us? Regurgitate the truth I'm giving you. That's enough. And start saying, what is Spirit saying through this generation that we desperately need to hear, that we're not paying attention to? Perhaps that's our calling, to suspend our ego long enough to look into the eyes of every child and say, I see who you are becoming. And I will love you all the way there. I asked him 100 questions today. Love was the answer for every one of them. There are those that say love is the answer. Now, what was your question? Love is the answer. What is your question? And my final point as I conclude, there's a child who has traveled with you your entire life. One who lives beneath your accomplishments, your political party, your belief system, your religion, your disappointments, your titles, your scars, your wins, your losses, and your labels and your identity. That child is waiting for us. The world is waiting for that child. Not to become somebody new, but to remember, be reborn and welcomed home. Hello? It's your younger self here. Have you forgotten me? Jesus said it clearly, become like a child to enter the kingdom of heaven. But no, we need to get bigger. I need to do more. I need to collect more. I need to be more gregarious or loud in my defense of my truth. It's not what the still small voice of God is doing. We're creating the hell on earth. And the children are saying, what are you handing me? I don't want hell. I'm not accepting hell. I want heaven. So perhaps our calling is much larger than raising kids. It's allowing the kids to teach us, to slow down enough to raise the parts of ourselves that we have forgotten. Children are not distracting us from the spiritual life. They are demonstrating it. They're showing us what we have forgotten. That's one of the reasons I participate here. I've heard a number of people say, oh, I don't need to come on Sunday. I've heard it. Nah, I've kind of outgrown it. If you have outgrown the ability to sit at the feet of a child and recognize the face of God, or the feet of somebody who's hurting or who's exploring or hearing these concepts for the first time, I'm asking you to look again. What's the buzz? Tell me what's happening from the Jesus Christ superstar. What's the buzz? Tell me what's happening. Talk to the 2-year-old, the 3-year-old, and the 4-year-old. We're not simply here to admire children as a pretty decoration on our service. We're not here just to provide for them or to protect them. We are here to become them. Hey, you. It's younger you. Do you still remember me? Go do something outrageously fun and funky today. And so it is, and so it shall be.